My partner and I have found a good way of practicing. After each tone, we play all kinds of chords so that we forget where we are. Then we play the next tone to hear what it is. This way, we're not able to use relative pitch as much.
Yes, and this way, we're also slowing down our progress with the exercises. Once again, this goes in that category of trying to block out relative pitch. I've had many people tell me this. They're sitting there practicing with their partner, and they say, "What's this note?" And the partner says, "A." And then they do this. Or maybe they play chords. Kind of crazy stuff in order to confuse you so that you forget where you were. Now, this is not right. We don't try to get rid of that feeling of relationship. As a matter of fact, it's okay if the ear begins to grasp onto it at first. If you do that kind of a thing, first of all, it's going to take forever to do your exercises because you have to play all these notes to confuse you all the time. And second of all, it will not help perfect pitch. It will not help either one. It will not help relative pitch, and it will not help perfect pitch. You want to hear these colors in the context of relationships because really it's all one. Now, this doesn't mean that perfect pitch relies on relationships, no. But we want to hear these colors in the context of relationships. And if every time when you're practicing, you mess yourself all up so that the next example you're listening to, you don't know where you are, this is going to dramatically slow down the color hearing. As a matter of fact, I don't think you would really be able to develop it. You'll understand more why this is true as you practice the exercises. You're hearing the colors, but the ear also puts it in the context of a relationship as well. Doesn't mean that perfect pitch has anything to do with relationship, but the ear is growing up in a very rounded way. So don't do anything like that. That'll just slow you down. This reminds me of the last time I was in Hollywood, actually, and I was lecturing in the Los Angeles area. I got a call from two really great guys from San Francisco who were practicing the exercises, and they were saying that they just weren't getting any results. And this is one of the things that I found, that they were sort of messing up with chords. In between every example, they were playing all these tones and everything to sort of mess the other up so that they could just listen for the colors. That was one thing that we found that we needed to correct. But another thing was, I said, how do you practice when you're doing these exercises? Explain to me exactly what you do. And I found out they were doing something like this. Maybe one of the guys would play A, and he would say, what is this tone? The other would say, E flat. The first one would say, wrong, what's this one? C sharp. Wrong, well, what's this one then? In other words, we found that they weren't correcting the error. If they got it wrong, they just said, wrong, and then they just went on to the very next example. Now, there's no ear training happening here, because whenever we make a mistake, we have to go back and listen to what we got wrong. Otherwise, how is the ear ever going to learn it? If I play this A, and you tell me it's a C, and I just say wrong, you haven't learned what the A is, and you haven't learned what the C is. All you've learned is that you got it wrong. Now, you're never going to develop perfect pitch this way, because the ear training occurs when you make the errors and then you correct them. So that's just something I was reminded of, which is also something we want to watch for. Always correct the errors, and don't do any of this messing up kind of thing either.
What if your partner is better at it and gets ahead of you?
Oh, this is fine. If you find that your partner is way ahead of you, then when you're testing him, you just test him on whatever exercise he's on. And when he tests you, you just go back to whatever exercise you're on. This is fine. You don't have to be exactly in the same place. But while you're listening, by the way, while you're testing him, you should be listening to what you're playing for him. So if he's working on tones that you're not already doing, you can still be listening, because you gain a lot just by testing somebody. The teacher gains more than the student does. And so when you're testing somebody and you're helping them develop perfect pitch, it's an excellent time for you to be listening yourself and gaining just as much.
Should the tones be played loudly or softly? And how long do you play the tones?
We can just play the tones at a medium pressure, whatever instrument we have. and we can let them stay for a long time. Let them kind of die out. Give your partner as long as he wants in order to, he or she wants, I should say, in order to identify the tone. But then sometimes do them quickly. And then give your partner as long as they want to identify the tone. And then another thing we should do, let's do speed recognition of tones. And what I mean by that is, take all the tones that you are working with. Let's say you've got 6 tones that you're dealing with, and you play them quickly like this. At about that kind of a speed, and your partner names all the tones that he's hearing. And you don't slow down. If your partner cannot name the tones, then he just says, "Don't know," or something, and then you go on to the next one. See how many tones you can get when you go at a constant speed without stopping. This is a very, very good practice, this speed recognition of tones. Now, we do this on the relative pitch course with all the intervals. It's a marvelous training because it lets the ear gear up to listening and very quickly making a judgment. And it works very well, too, with absolute pitch training. So we want to do it all different ways. We play long and take a long time to evaluate. And then sometimes we play short, and then sometimes we play short and fast at a constant speed to see how many tones we can get like that. These are all very good things to do to culture the ear all the way around.
Sometimes I can tell the original key of a piece even when it is transposed. Don't you think that a piece in G major, for instance, always sounds like G major, even when you play it in A major?
Well, the thing is, when we have a piece in G major and we transpose it into A major, it does sound like A major. What confuses us a little is, if we're used to hearing a piece in a certain key, like C major, and then we transpose it into C sharp, maybe, then we may think that it has a quality to it, which is the same as in the original key. Well, you're right, because the character of the piece is still there. Just because you changed the key does not change the character of the piece. But it's the character which is the same. The color sound of the key does change. So if it was in G and it's now in A, you have the character of the G major piece now playing in a different color sound. So you may think that even if you transpose a piece, then you can tell what the original key was. All you're doing is you're recognizing that character which you are used to hearing in a certain key. That's the way that works there. But we have to remember that the absolute pitch color always changes if you fool around with that pitch. You flatten it, sharp it, raise or lower the key, and the entire feel, the entire color of the piece will change. See, there's many levels of perception of the piece. The character of the piece is determined by the relationships. But there's another subtle quality about the piece, and that is these colors. And when you change those colors, the new colors which are mixed in with a character will produce an entirely new work. But only the person with absolute pitch can appreciate that kind of a difference.
Color Hearing Technique Session.
Solo keyboardists. Okay, I'm going to give you a list of assignments, so you're going to want to write these down. The first is, using 2 hands, we're going to play white harmonic doubles. That means with each hand, I can play a single note. I can play them closer together, but I'll include wide. And we simply identify the tones. B, F, just like that. And we'll play melodic ascending and descending doubles. That means we can go like this. That's an ascending wide double, D, C. And here's a descending wide double, A, G. You can do your harmonic drills first or your melodic drills first. It's your choice. Now be sure to hold your fingers on the keys when you're going wide. hold them just above the key after you play it, so that you can check yourself. Otherwise, you get into this situation where you play the tones, and then you can't find them to check which ones you played. So hold your fingers above the keys when going wide, and then we'll do one hand white triples harmonically. G, A, E. Now, when we're doing one hand white triples harmonically like this, don't worry about finger knowledge. Obviously, when we're playing this chord, you can kind of feel what the tones could be. We don't try to block out finger knowledge. Otherwise, it comes into that same category as people who try to block out relative pitch. We don't block out anything. If we feel the tones, we know that these first two are together. We can feel it. That's fine. Just play the tones and name them. And if we can't get it on the first listen, play it again. A third, fourth listen, whatever it takes in order to get the tones. And then we'll also have one-handed white triples melodically. G, A, D. We can do the melodic tones in any order. And we'll have two-handed white triples harmonically and melodically. You can figure out how to do that all on your own. You're experienced in all these drills now. So that's your big set of assignments for this session. That's quite a lot for you to chew on for a while. We need to pass a verification round for each one before we continue to our next session. Okay, for our solo guitarists, before we were using our A major chord, and this helped us to determine the tone that we then had to identify. So now we're going to do something a little different. We're just going to use the A string by itself. So you only get one tone as a cue. This is going to require our ears to perk up just a little bit more. You'll see. So that's your drill. It's very simple, isn't it? We're just going to drop the chord and go to a single A string and repeat the very same drill. A string, then any tone. C sharp, A string, another tone, G, just like that. And we'll also want to continue with our major chords, just like last session. We'll now use our C sharp and D sharp major chords, then a tone, just like the last time. So work with these two chords plus your new A string drill, and that is your assignment for this session. Now for our ear training meditation, we're going to add the tone B to our collection. For those of you who are skimping on the ear training meditation, I want to recommend that you spend a little more time with this technique. It's a very powerful drill, so much so that we're going to spend an entire masterclass on this one technique alone in session number 13. So it'd be good to spend a little time with this drill now that we've got a full C major scale. Guitarists, of course, are adding G sharp to their drills, and our team players will add the same tones to their collections and continue as they were with singles, doubles, and triples. And we want to do two verification rounds this time for our harmonic doubles and harmonic triples, because now we have a full scale, and I want to make sure you're doubly verified. So from now on, we're going to do two verification rounds for our harmonic doubles and triples. We can still do one verification round for our melodic examples. Now, maybe sometimes one of the two people in our teams will get ahead. That's fine. If one of you is getting ahead of the other, don't worry. Just drill the other person with what they need. And then that person will drill you with what you need. You don't have to be in exactly the same place. Just continue. And make sure that you're practicing after your ear training sessions. This is very important, to always go back and play our instrument after our ear training. This stabilizes the listening that we've gained in our drills. We want to make our ear training practical. If you just do your ear training and run off and do something else, then you haven't put it immediately into practice. Now, sometimes we can't practice after ear training. That's fine. But whenever you can, play your instrument immediately after you do your ear training. And don't try to listen to all the tones in the music. Sometimes when we're studying our C major scale here, for example, then we go out and we try to hear a G in all the music. We want to see if we're learning perfect pitch. We want to see if any of these tones are sticking in our ears. This we don't try to do because we're still learning. We're still preparing the ear at this point. Don't make yourself frustrated if you can't hear a G out in the real world of music at this point. We're not concerned about that. We're just preparing our ear, and you're doing great. As we're seeing, relative pitch puts the colors of the tones into a context. We're feeling this home base of C. It's the relationships that give us this feeling. And the colors are in a context of C major at this point. We don't want just perfect pitch, because that would be the TV with only colors. What good is TV with only colors and no shapes? Relative pitch gives us the shape. We need relative pitch for music in motion, because pitches move. So if you do relative pitch training, this will help us gain perfect pitch much faster, because it opens and massages the ear in various ways. Relative pitch works to unlock the music. Whenever we're unlocking something by ear, that is the domain of relative pitch. This is not perfect pitch. When we can hear that this sound is a dominant ninth sound, that's relative pitch. So when we have relative pitch, we don't have to get inside each and every little tone to sort it all out. The relative pitch sense sorts it out for us. It says, oh wow, dominant ninth sound. Then perfect pitch lets us know it's a D dominant ninth. It's not an E flat dominant ninth. It is a D dominant ninth. That's how they work together. Whenever we're dealing with chords, then relative pitch comes into play. Always remember this. Chords relate directly with relative pitch because the tones in a chord relate to each other. So any chord is going to have a direct bearing with your sense of relative pitch. You know, it was my very dear piano teacher, Helen Vinograd, that got me thinking in terms of chords and relative pitch at a very early age. I remember one day I was sitting there waiting for my lesson to start while Paula was taking her lesson on the piano. So I was just sitting there in the chair listening to Paula play, and I was listening very carefully as she was playing along. Mrs. Vinograd was watching me. She saw that I was listening very carefully, and all of a sudden she just goes, she had this incredibly beautiful European accent. She goes, stop, stop, Paula. David Lucas is hearing. And so she stopped the lesson right all of a sudden and had Paula play me these notes. D, B flat, A. She just tested me right then and there for perfect pitch to see if I could identify the tones. And I could, because I had already discovered the secret to perfect pitch. And Mrs. Vinograd said, you see, he has a perfect pitch. But then she said, now Paula, play some chords. And Paula played a D major chord, but I said G major. I was confused with the chords. And so Mrs. Vinograd said, see, your ear is closed. You may be able to hear the individual notes okay, but the chords, the ear is not opened up enough to encompass the chords. So that's when she sent me off to the music school to do more relative pitch training, which then affected the perfect pitch. It then opened up the perfect pitch. That's why they're two sides of the same coin. That's why I always emphasize the ear needs both.